Hello everyone, I am Penny and I'm an alcoholic. I guess it's St. Patty's Day is coming and I have a... Yes, thank you, I feel very special. Oh, so much going through my head, none of it of which is about what I'm going to be talking about tonight. I left work with something work-related going on, which is so uncommon, just an annoyance, an irritation, and it just is still hanging with me, and I was trying to shake it, and I was leaving the house a little bit later than normal, so I felt rushed, and I just kind of started focusing on nature a little bit. I saw a bunch of birds hanging out on the wire, and then I saw a flock flying and saw the wind blowing and saw that the doors being left open tonight for some fresh air. And you know, and the other thing I noticed is while I've been speaking, this has nothing to do with step 8 and 9, by the way, just trying to be grateful here, how readily people laugh at this meeting. Because when I was speaking, it's like, oh my gosh, do they think I'm funny? Now I'm realizing you guys laugh at anything, funny or not, right? And that's great. You know, I need to be surrounded by people that are so willing to laugh. I mean, there was a time in my life where if it was funny, I would hold back, right? Because I want to teach you a lesson. I don't think you're funny. So, always growing. Step 8, made a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. The difference between making an apology and making an amends is that although apologizing is part of making amends, it is not enough to undo the pain and heartache my actions may have caused. Making amends is a way to work toward restoring the relationship as best we can. It helps us not live with regrets, to face them and learn from them. So the first part of step 8 is making the list. And pretty much, you know, we keep our 4-step until we get through this portion, because from there is where we get our list of people. And these are the people that we have hopefully had resentments towards or have harmed. And we use that to make the list and start making our amends. I also, at that time, I'm going to kind of talk about how I sponsor and a little bit about my experiences and work in these 2 steps. But we categorize them into 3 different groups. So the first type of categorization is the direct amends. So this is taking responsibility for my actions and meeting with the person who I want to reconcile with. And it involves carving out some time to have a heart-to-heart talk, to discuss openly and honestly the harms I imposed, and to find a way I can repair the hurt. For instance, if I have stolen money, then I need to make arrangements to pay it back. If I can't pay it all back at once at the time of the amends, I find it best to make installment loans and payments instead of trying to save it all up to pay back at once. I know for me, I like the wow factor, which speaks to my ego. And I've also found that taking the step of installment payments to fix what I broke, I think it builds trust with the other person. And I think it also builds trust within us, and that we start to believe like, wow, I'm really going to do this thing. And I think it's the better way of doing it. And the other thing is sometimes we can just kind of diminish that situation and never pay it back. I did have an example, not in my personal life, but do I say who? Somebody very close to me, of a situation in which they did not pay the money back. And you're probably thinking, well, what could that be? Well, It was money that was, in essence, stolen because it wasn't paid back, and the person, it was a drug dealer, okay? And, you know, it was good, I think, advice, that sponsor to the sponsee, about not making financial restitution, because sometimes it's best never to have contact with certain people. And if you look at it, I see it as a situation also in which you're kind of breaking the law because you broke the law a second time. So, you know, obviously those are all things that we need to discuss with our sponsors. So that's the direct amends. Then there are the indirect amends. And this category is for harms that cannot be undone. So, for instance, if the amends is towards someone I don't know or can't find, or someone who is dead, I would need to search a way to be selfless. An example, for instance, would be volunteering somewhere that would bring honor to that person. Or maybe become an organ donor if a person was killed because of drunk driving. Or if I stole from a parent who was now deceased, making a donation to the favorite nonprofit or charitable organization. Or even helping a family member that maybe doesn't have anybody for them, because it would still be like a brother or a sister or somebody that would be in need of that parent after that parent died. And quite honestly, I never did this. I never really found anybody that I couldn't make a direct amends to. And it's been interesting going through this process, because last week I was sharing that there was something I had found that I had admitted. I guess it was back on 4 and 5, not 6 and 7. But it's something I want to be mindful of when I, you know, in future, working the steps with my sponsees. And I couldn't help but think, what a great motivation to do for others, to offer charity and support on the foundation of righting a wrong for the past. It almost made me like, geez, do I go out and do something wrong so I can right it, you know? You know, I think if I really searched my past and maybe my not too distant past, there would be something that would surface in which I could, almost in a memorial type way, do something kind for somebody without them knowing. Then there's the third category, a living amends. So this involves a lifestyle change, and it means that things I used to do that caused hurt and destruction are discarded as I work towards moving forward from those deeds. I think this can get tricky, because I can forget that I made this type of amends to benefit another person, and I can sugarcoat the amends by saying I'm making a living amends, but what I'm really doing is just living life sober. You know, and I've heard lots of people say, oh, I'm making a living amends. And sometimes I wonder about that. Like, did they really circumvent an amends? Are they really making a living amends? So I think the key to that, and I'm just, you know, really investigating what that means, is being mindful of the other person, I think, is more about making that living amends. Because if I'm doing it, if I'm just sober for my own benefit, how is that an amends, I guess is what I'm saying. So the other part of step 8 is become willing. So I discourage sponsees from making any amends prior to us discussing them. And so this is to ensure that they are approaching it thoroughly and to assist them in the categorizing. This allows for us to determine if there is real remorse or sorrow for the part they played. There is no sense in making an amends for the sake of checking it off. And if we don't feel it, if we don't feel like making the amends, we examine why. And sometimes we might have to wait. Sometimes, you know, there's prayer involved and asking God to intervene to change our heart and to the way we look at that situation. I think it's crucial And I've had to do that several times with sponsees, that that process of discussing the amends, maybe even rehearsing it, it isolates any hesitation that may exist because of lingering anger or confusion about what we're really apologizing for. And prayer is so vital so as to get our heart right before we place ourselves in front of that other person. So step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So I have to ask myself, what am I expecting to happen when I make the amends? To be forgiven? To forgive another? To rid myself of guilt and shame? To earn back trust? The Big Book tells us that our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. We are to focus on setting a wrong right. We are not to feel that our mistakes put us in a place that our whole existence is in question. So I'm going to divert a little bit, talk about fear, because I think that is a huge component of the whole amends process, the actual making of them. And the book says we should not be servile. I think that's how you say that, right? Servile? Or scrapping. Scraping. Scraping, yeah. Scrappy, scraping. We are God's people, and we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. So servile means to have a fear like a prisoner has of their torturer or tormentor. I think if any fear is present, it should be like the fear a child has of a good parent that comes from wanting to please that parent out of respect and love. This family fear, if you will, stems from displeasing the parent, the source of the child's security and love. This is how I see my God, like a good parent, and why I fear him and remind myself this is a good fear and different from fear of people to gain their approval or to avoid any of their possible anger. I think the more time that passes, the more resistance we have to facing our fears. Maybe there is anger that we chose to hang on to or some other uncomfortable emotion. But procrastinating can rent space in my head, or worse, I end up justifying my side of the situation. Therefore, delving into the 9th step should quickly follow steps 5 and 7. For me, I think fear was the main reason I was hesitant. Fear I might have to bear the brunt of their anger, because reminding them by making my amends of the wrongdoing I did was going to stir up bad feelings. You know, I was a person that had a lot of secrets, and I still have a tendency to omit things, to keep things quiet. And, you know, I have a sense of where that came from. But, you know, if I don't say anything, maybe they forgot, right? That's what I'm hoping for. Another reason I think that people have a hard time with making amends is shame. So shame is another reason for hesitancy, because we think that doing something wrong means we are bad people. We do bad things because we were or are spiritually sick people. I find focusing on becoming healed spiritually by working the steps reduces my shame, because I'm living in the solution and doing more good than harm. And another reason I thought of that people are hesitant about doing their amends is ego. An ego can tell me that, hey, so-and-so is wrong too, right? They owe me an apology. I've had to make amends to a couple people that I really didn't want to go down that road, because all I could focus on was what they did. I understood my part, but their part was much worse, you know. And there was a concern about being able to stay in my hula hoop during that amends. Sometimes, too, I think that we can feel that because so much time has passed, that our amends are too little too late. And we think that we have missed our chance to really have an impact. So we also need to be careful to not be too quick to right our wrongs and involve other people by being hasty and foolish by sacrificing others to save ourselves. We need to be careful to not injure others. And the big book speaks of this on page 79, and I'd like to read a little bit of that. Usually, however, other people are involved. Therefore, we are not to be hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit. A man we know had remarried. Because of resentment and drinking, he had not paid alimony to his first wife. She was furious. She went to court and got an order for his arrest. He had commenced to our way of living and secured a position and was getting his head above water. It would have been impressive heroics if he had walked up to the judge and said, "Here I am." We thought he ought to be willing to do that if necessary, but if he were in jail, he could provide nothing for either family. We suggested he write his first wife admitting his faults and asking forgiveness. He did, and also sent a small amount of money, and he told her he would try to do that in the future. He said he was perfectly willing to go to jail if she insisted. Of course, she did not. And the whole situation has long since been adjusted. So where was I on here? I'm at the end of the page. All right. So the big book also speaks of those of us who are married and had affairs. I find its advice to be wise. So on page 81, I guess I should have left that open. One of my favorite parts of the big book. If you're sure our wife does not know, I like the way, if you're sure your husband does not know, should we tell him? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. I don't know if that would make me feel better. God, anyways, God is not willing that we have affairs. But anyways, more than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this is the best course to take. So, you know, Eric and I, we both decided to let bygones be bygones in that area. We were both, you know, unfaithful to each other, and we just decided to give this sobriety thing a chance, and it never came up after that. You know, we both made our amends to each other, and we moved forward from that, and it's never been repeated. So on page 82, one of my favorite verses is the alcoholic is, I said verses, paragraphs, sorry, I forgot what book I was reading. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" I love that word picture because, you know, I hear that quoted often in the rooms that, you know, we're like the tornado ripping through the lives of others. Hence, we have steps to resolve that, you know. And I think this is such an integral part of us getting well. So, how do we make the amends? So being accountable and not make excuses for my actions. This is why I think it is wise to rehearse the amends, but not the outcome. Because although the outcome is normally favorable, it might not be what we expected. Be clear about why I'm doing this. My sobriety is dependent upon it. And I can't say how much, you know, as much time as I spend with my sponsees and getting their fourth step done, I think I spend a considerable amount of time on the making the amends. Every amends we talk about. And I just want to make sure that, you know, no one is inadvertently harmed and that the sponsee has a good experience as best as can be expected. It is easy once we have our drinking behind us to look only forward and forget about people we may have hurt in the past. But I think God blesses us when we go further and take the step of making amends to those we have wronged. So I thought I'd share a few of my amends from my first inventory, because I guess I'm from the school that today I work step 10. Yes, I've done formal amends or formal four steps and all the way up through 9. But I find that pretty much I use step 10 for that now. So, one of the first people, you know, I always tell my sponsees, what's the easiest one, right? And usually it's parents. So mine was definitely my parents. And I remember I went to them and, you know, I knew exactly what I wanted to apologize for. And that was for lying and causing worry in their life. You know, things like, I would say I was not drinking. Like when I was home, I mean, I was home until I was almost 19. And I come home drunk. Were you drinking? No. I mean, yes, I was. I mean, I just am amazed how blatantly and easily I would lie to them. And they would ask, well, where were you? Because I, you know, this is after I'm married. I'd be gone for 2 days. And, you know, quite honestly, sometimes I didn't know where I was at. But most times I knew where I was at. And I never checked in. I never told anybody where I was at. So that worry, after I became a parent, I just so understood that. And you know, the anger and the sadness that I imposed upon my parents, the anger about the blatant lying and being sad about, you know, treating them like that, you know, that's where I was at when I made that amends. And like I said, after I had my own daughter, it really hit home then. I understood how that must have been for them. You know, I was just very rebellious and willful. I was not, I was sneaky in that I pretended to be the good child, but I was the wild child. Once I got out of their sight, and it was much easier back in those days. There were no cell phones. You know, there was no way that they knew where I was at. Poof, I was gone. And how that must have been very scary for them. I made amends to my brother and sister. I'm older than them. I did kind of party with my brother, but it was my sister that I really felt bad for. I remember a couple times, she was a big worrier, and she was totally terrified about my life. I had no idea how scared she was. I mean, she thought I was going to die. Well, I could have, but, you know, sometimes I'd be partying in the car and she would be riding with me. And I just, you know, so removed from the impact that I was having upon my family in that respect. So, you know, I made amends to both my brother and sister for treating them like crap, you know, when I was partying. And my husband, obviously, you know, for cheating on him and giving him the same lame excuses about where I was at when I wasn't home. I mean, we both knew, but, well, I'm going to lie about it regardless. My supervisor and my coworkers, you know, for not pulling my weight about lying, saying that I was sick, but I was hungover. It was kind of one and the same, right? but I had to come up with some creative reasons why I was sick again. I had my one boss, well, the boss that I had at the time I made the amends, I remember his name. He had a funny last name. I'm going to say it. Hopefully nobody has his last name. His last name was Barfy. And so he was so frustrated, I could tell. And he was a decent person. And I remember, I think he had left the organization, and I had a different boss. So, yeah, I made two amends to supervisors. So I called him up. He goes, "I knew you had a problem." not in a mean way, but I think it just validated. He probably thought he was going crazy. What do we got going on here? More recent amends, I guess you could call this a live-in amends, in that it's somebody that I currently work with, and I did a 10th step, and I added this person to my prayer list, people that I pray for on a regular basis, and continually refocusing on my issues, not hers. It's like a mantra throughout. Remember that 10th step, Penny. Remember what was really driving you to react in this way. This is, you have plenty of issues to work on. So that's my living amends, is treating her with decency, even though sometimes her actions can be very disruptive. That's her stuff. I don't need to react to that. So that is an ongoing situation. And I thought I'd share an example of when I made an amends. This happened years after I was sober. And it came to mind, somebody I had supervised, in that I treated her not very nicely. She was very difficult to supervise. And she had a lot of life issues, and so did her children and her husband and her parents, and it was just constant need to work around her being late and being off, and it was just really frustrating. And I know that I had a tendency to kind of zero in and find anything wrong that she was doing. I was really hard on her. So I thought, you know, I'm going to call Nancy up and let her know about this. And so I went through, you know, apologizing and saying, you know, I wish I didn't do that, blah, blah, blah. And there was a click after I was all done. She hung up on me. And it was, I just like was in shock because I wasn't expecting that. So the hurt was deep, apparently, for her. But, you know, that's the best I could do was, you know, years later, you know, feeling that God was really asking me to reach out to her. So we may do our best to make amends, and these amends may not be accepted by others. It is the right of others to decide whether they want to forgive us or not. What we have control over is in making the proper amends. How other people respond to our amends is up to them. Making amends can bring about peace for us and peace and forgiveness in our relationships. What a great gift, forgiveness. I know when I have been forgiven, the feeling is wonderful. Imagine giving the gift of peace to someone else by helping them forgive you by making right our wrongs. Which brings to me a verse from my other book, and it goes, if possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all people. And I think that really sums up, you know, the whole making amends. So page 83, I have something else I noted on here. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile. Am I saying that right? Servile? I keep feeling like I'm saying that wrong. And scraping the bottom. That's how I can remember that. Yeah. As God's people, we stand on our feet and we don't crawl before anyone. So I thought, I'm all done. So I thought, what a better way to end this talk about 8 and 9 by reading the promises that are available for all of us to read on the bottom of page 83 and part of 84. So if we are painstaking about this phase and this phase, I used to wonder, what's this phase? It's the making amends phase of our development. We will be amazed before we're halfway through. And I think it means halfway through making our amends. So if you've got 10, maybe 5 or 6, you're feeling pretty good about it. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for others. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Question and answer time.
I covered everything in such great detail. There is no question. I get that.
But it's always Kevin.
Where?
There's always Kevin.
It's always Kevin.
See? Never fails.
Any questions?
All right. Thanks again, Penny. Mm-hmm. Always a good job. Always. You were talking about the... I thought you said three kinds of amends. There was living amends, direct amends.
Indirect.
Oh, indirect. Okay, good. That was my first question. Let Ian do it.
Thank you.
Ian. You're in trouble now.
Hi, Ian, alcoholic.
Hi, Ian.
I think you touched on this a little bit with the ex-wife, but what if, say, you had to make amends to an employer and you could lose your job over it? How do you handle a situation like that?
I think there's a lot of factors involved in that. If losing your job would harm you if you had a family. You know, there's a great story in the Big Book about the fella that decided after talking with his sponsor and his family, he ruined another man's life. And he ended up confessing. He went to church and kind of stood up in front of everybody and said, you know, I did this terrible thing. And everybody, you know, we're so ready to forgive others, I think. Most people are. We all are cheering for the underdog. And I think if we go prepared, and you know, we're not dragging other people in. And sometimes, you know, I could see a family wanting, you know, us to just be right with the world and be right with God, and be willing to sacrifice that. Be willing to sacrifice that job. I think, though, the key thing is always talking to your sponsor first and really examining. Because, you know, sometimes I know I can get very tunneled vision when I'm thinking through a problem. I'm thinking, oh, I have all this time in doing this. And I can get very narrow-minded because of my own fears. I can just think of one outcome. Well, sometimes other people share other outcomes that could happen. I had a sponsee call. She was just in a tailspin this week. And they made an investment, and she just could not go through with it. She was sick with just anxiety and couldn't sleep. And it's like, well, what's your husband saying? And, you know, she just made an impulsive decision, and it was all because she chose not to talk to anybody about it. She just says, oh, I was in the moment. I thought it'd be great to do that. And I think that can happen when we're making amends. We just so want that monkey off of our back. We feel badly. Or the other side I can see, too, is that we don't want to make the amends, so we don't tell anybody about it. And I think that's the importance of the fifth step, you know, during that time, to make sure that we're asking of the person that's sharing their fourth, is there anything that we forgot to cover? Because that's the kind of stuff that the big book says we can go back out and drink over. I don't know if that answered your question or not. Okay.
As a follow-up to that, when you know, when somebody, you do your fifth step and then you have your list for your amends from your fifth step, has your experience come where some people that you sponsor, or even yourself, that other things have come up in between there, mm-hmm. where one piggybacks off of another?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know that you said something about making sure that you make sure that everybody checks in with their sponsor before they make amends,
mm-hmm.
because yeah, that's always very important.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who's still in jail 30 years later because of that, because he did his first step, second step, and ninth step.
Mm-hmm.
And your goddamn program doesn't work, which, you know, well, you're in jail and you didn't follow it, and that's the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I always say that every time I'm near a ninth, an eighth, and a ninth step because of that situation.
Yeah.
The other curse that I like to do is, you mentioned it one other time, was taking supplies from work.
Mm-hmm.
I was in my mid-40s, and I was listening to someone speaking on the ninth step, and that they said they stole office supplies and that they had to make amends for those. It almost knocked me out of the chair, because I never bought a pencil or pad of paper or anything up to like 45 years, and like those were like gifts for working. I mean, I worked at home. Of course, they had to supply everything. I've been retired now for 12 years. I still have some of those supplies. And when I heard that, and I've had to buy office supplies for 20 years and still have other things from work. So, you know, those were a couple of the shockers that, you know, I mean, of things that I didn't know when I was doing those steps. When you work with somebody and they have something that comes up, and it kind of piggybacks on what Ian was saying, is where it threatens or could threaten your job.
Mm-hmm.
I think you said that, you know, you had to check with everybody like it says in the big book, but maybe that could happen, like, you know, after, if you leave that job or something like that, where it wouldn't affect something like that. Have you had any situations where you had to do stuff like that?
You know, I think, I don't want to stereotype, but working with women is different than working with men. And I hear that when Eric, in very general ways, you know, he sponsors a lot of guys, a lot of young guys who are usually involved in more than just drinking. And so, you know, there's more of a mess when, you know, the more there is, the more of a mess there is. And I've never really had to do that that I can recall. You know, I was thinking about, you know, how do you make restitution for things that you've taken from your workplace? I remember just working longer. I work longer than my shift for a period of time to kind of, well, here, I'm donating my time back because, you know, I really couldn't just like, hey, here's, you know, 50 bucks or whatever, you know? But I've never had a situation where somebody could lose. You know, I think about people not being able to get a job because of being honest. You know, like filling out a job app and they ask, you know, have you ever, you know, do you have a substance abuse problem or anything like that? And sometimes, you know, I've suggested to mention that, and sometimes I've suggested not to mention that. So I think every situation is so unique. And, you know, always, you know, seek, you know, writing out the four stuff really gets to the crux of, you know, is it fear? Is it ego? Is it shame? You know, really find out, why am I hesitant to do this? And if none of those things are involved in not being truthful, and if it's not going to harm anybody, you probably need to go forward with it, I would think. I mean, I would probably suggest that. But, you know, when you got people depending upon you, it's hard, yeah. You know, so you have to kind of pull them in and all of that good stuff.
Thank you. Good job.
Thank you.